This is Jay Sekulow. The world asks, where is Kim Jong-un?
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Yes, I do have a very good idea, but I can't talk about it now. I just wish him well. I've had a very good relationship with Kim Jong-un. If I weren't president, you'd be in war. You would have been in war with Korea. You would have been in war with North Korea if I wasn't president. That I can tell you. He expected that. That I can tell you.
Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110.
I hope he's fine. I do know how he's doing, relatively speaking. We will see. You'll probably be hearing in the not-too-distant future.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to broadcast. So where is Kim Jong-un? That's the real question. I'll tell you, there's an interesting aspect of this, and that is there's another soundbite, and I don't know if we have it. It's where a reporter from Korea asked the question or makes a statement that the Kim Jong-un had a message for the president that he delivered on Saturday, and the president had a quick response to that. Will, do we have that? That was in the press conference yesterday, and it's been played on a lot of the media. We'll get that for everybody, but it kind of tells you that there's a lot more to this than anybody knows, at least publicly. And that could have big repercussions. I mean, the whole situation with the Korean Peninsula is always a tense situation, but even more so when you've got the leader unaccounted for. And I think that's at least what you could say right now, is that he is unaccounted for. There's also some news in Washington. I want to go to Than Bennett on this right away, because they were scheduled to come back May 4th, both the House and the Senate. Than, what's happening there?
Yeah, so May 4th was the comeback date for both the House and the Senate, and Leader McConnell announced several days ago that the Senate would indeed come back to start working on a number of things, including the next response to the coronavirus, as well as, Jay, obviously, you know, this is a very important time for confirmations, not just for judges, but also for the executive branch. You need executive branch officials to respond to a pandemic like this. So it's very important, I think, for the Senate to be here, and Leader McConnell announced they're coming back. But yesterday, Jay, after some delay, Leader Hoyer, number two in charge in the House, had announced that the House would be back next Monday, May 4th as well, to begin working on the next coronavirus response bill. Jay, the response from Democrat members in Washington, D.C. was very much opposed to that. When he announced it on the conference call, they did not want to return back. And look, some of this is understandable. Cases in the Washington, D.C. area continue to rise at this point, unlike some areas of the country. So Here's the news, Jay. They've just announced that the House is not returning next week. I think the next that they would look at would be the following Monday, which would be May 11th. So as we sit right now, the Senate is returning next Monday, May 4th, to begin in-person business. But the House, Jay, is not. They've announced that they're going to take at least one more week before they return to session.
Which I think raises the point that we have to be cognizant of here, and that is, where is he? What does it mean geopolitically? And it was very telling that the president was asked this question by the reporter. And in that question, the reporter said she had a message, or there was a message for the president from Kim Jong-un on Saturday. And the president said, and we're trying to find the bite right now, words to this effect, I don't think that's correct. You don't have a message from Kim Jong-un on Saturday, trust me. So there's obviously something significantly at play. We're going to be joined by our military experts on this broadcast, because I want to explore this and get a real sense of it. We'll take your calls and questions as well at 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Also, don't forget, we're in a matching challenge campaign here at the ACLJ, and we're in the last several days. Your support online, especially now, very difficult to open up mail, as you can imagine, with staff dispersed. ACLJ.org, any amount you donate to the American Center for Law and Justice, we're going to get a matching grant for it, and we encourage you to do that if you're able, only if you're able, ACLJ.org. Now, let me tell you something else we're going to do. On the last day of the match, which I think will be on Thursday, we're going to do a live, well, it's not live, it's live to tape. This was a best of concert series that we put together with the Jay Sekulow Band with four new songs. And with John Schneider that we did, you've seen a couple of those, two more you haven't seen. We're going to bring out some of the ones with Lee Greenwood and Ricky Skaggs and others and put a best of together. So you know, it will not look like social distancing when it plays, but this was way before the pandemic that we're going through, but we wanted to play that as we have traditionally done on the last day of our matching challenge campaigns. We'll be back with more and your calls in a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at aclj.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at aclj.org. For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at aclj.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at aclj.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. If you're watching on Facebook or Periscope or over on the our website, you'll notice a new microphone. Rogan brought this one over. We're trying different ones as we are working remotely. Now, Jordan's going to be returning to the office, to the studio next week. So he will be in studio. So you'll have video of us. We will still be having our experts, like we're about to have Wes Smith, calling in or coming in by Skype, whatever the case may be, because we have to work. Some of us have to still continue to work remotely. Let me go to Wes Smith, and we're taking your calls on the situation with North Korea and other calls you might have too. 1-800-684-3110. Wes, you served as a colonel in the United States Army. You've served in the on the Korean Peninsula. Give me your take of this. This is very bizarre. No sighting for 2 weeks. The president made that statement, which was pretty telling. What's your sense?
Yeah, you know, there's so much we do not know about North Korea, and that's true of every nation in the world, and even to some extent, Jay, for China, which is North Korea's closest ally. For example, you know, North Korea reports, you know, their officials, that they have had absolutely zero COVID cases. And we know that's not true, but the world actually has absolutely no idea of how COVID has impacted North Korea. So concerning Kim and his mysterious disappearance, it is very troubling. I mean, could he be ill with COVID, or did he, as some sources are speculating, have a cardiac event? But anyway, you know, no one outside of his inner circle knows. He is reportedly in his mid-30s, looks about that. He's obese. He's a heavy smoker. Some people say he's an adult diabetic. I think the president, you know, because of his own intelligence sources, knows more than the rest of us know, and probably more than he can say. But if Kim is incapacitated, or if he were to die, it has potential national security ramifications for the United States as well as the rest of the world. And I think this is for several reasons. You know, first, there are two other family members that we know of who would probably be vying for power, his sister, Kim Yo-young, and his uncle, Kim Jong-il. But in addition to those two family members, and by the way, Kim has an older brother, Kim Jong-chul, who was passed over by their father to be the leader of North Korea. He is something, I guess, of a flaky person. He definitely loves the West. He loves Eric Clapton, for example. And his father felt like he wasn't stable enough. Yeah, exactly. There you go.
Right.
But anyway, but in addition to that, Jay, there are also powerful and influential military leaders who might use this opportunity to take control or even to oust the Kim family.
I want to get into that in a moment, but I think we've got to take a step back here. And that is to put all of this in perspective. Why are we that concerned about it? Now, Fan, you know from your work in Washington and our work in Washington that the Korean Peninsula has always been viewed for the last 50 years as a hotbed of potential, more than that actually, close to 70 years, as a hotbed of danger because things can happen. And we've had the missile testings in the past. We're going to get into this void of leadership means. What's your sense in Washington as this is breaking? Then I'm going to play what the president said.
Well, it's an incredibly important region for a number of reasons, Jay. Obviously, the alliance with South Korea, the proximity to China, the trade relation, or the proximity to China for South Korea, as well as what their relationship means to the United States, as Wes mentioned. When it comes to North Korea, Jay, one of the reasons that we probably need to pay a disproportionate amount of attention to them is because they're a nuclear power, and we also just don't have as much confirmed data on the region. Now, I agree with Wes. I think the president and the intelligence community in the United States probably has quite a bit of information, but the public doesn't have nearly as much information about that repressive regime as most would. So it's disproportionately important to monitor it. Jay, what I think makes this situation unique, though, is this president has a relationship with President Kim, unlike any other previous president has. So, you know, I know you were going to play some sound from the president. We don't know what direct conversations they have had, but I will tell you there is an existing relationship there between the two men that just has not existed before. And I will tell you, in this uncertain situation, I think that can only be viewed as a good thing. Is it because we trust Kim? No, absolutely not. It's the opposite, Jay. But when you can have dialogue and get as much information as you can with a potential hotbed like this, Jay, I don't know how that can be anything but a good thing.
Let's go ahead. This was in the press conference yesterday. A question came forward on Kim Jong-un. Take a listen to the question and the president's comments, especially at the very end.
But last Saturday, Senator Graham, he mentioned it, Fox News, he interviewed. He said...
He didn't say anything last Saturday.
Kim Jong-un...
Nobody knows where he is, so he obviously couldn't have said it. If you have a... This is breaking news.
Yes.
That Kim Jong-un made a statement on Saturday, I don't think so.
I mean, Wes, I listened to that, and knowing this president pretty well, and obviously they know information that none of us know, It sounds like something significant at least has happened. I mean, there's speculation on our part, but all the media is speculating right now because this could have big ramifications.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. When you consider the fact, as you mentioned, that North Korea has a nuclear arsenal, you know, you do not want the entire Korean Peninsula and that part of the world to be destabilized by a leadership change if you can avoid it. Sort of the devil you know as opposed to the devil you don't know. And if an even more hawkish or erratic person to control, that could be, you know, very, very disconcerting. I think concerning the president, Jay, the United States, our intelligence sources, they know a lot more about the situation in North Korea, generally speaking, and even now, than they can say, because they have to protect how they know that. They have to protect their own sources and methods. And even though our sources and methods, by all accounts, are very limited in North Korea, we do have intel that comes from there. We do have some sources or methods, apparently. And I think the president's remark was very telling. I think the president and the intelligence community of the United States, they know a lot about what's going on, but they're not going to comment about it, at least not for now.
Jordan's joining us now, too, as well. Jordan, what's your sense of this? This is obviously the president has worked hard to get at least a speaking relationship with Kim Jong-un. I think that's been important for the well-being of our countries. I think it has brought some progress. It has stopped missile testing that was even more dangerous than what they are doing. But obviously something has happened. Now, whether this is a political ploy, we don't know. But what we do know, at least right now, we know that something is up. And Kim Jong-un now for over 2 weeks has not been seen, and he missed his father's or his grandfather's birthday celebration, which is almost like a holy day there.
That's right. It is a holy day there. I mean, they are seen as deities, so to miss that is a big deal. The only other option I could see, and picking up on the president's words, it seems like that's not the option, is that Kim would be using this as a way to purge those who he does not trust by taking this step back and seeing how the kind of top branch of the North Korean leadership would react if they didn't know if he was alive or not. And then he comes back and ends up purging those, even his own family members, as he's done before, so that he retains his control on power. But yeah. I think now when you listen to the president's comments about this and saying, I don't think you heard from him, I don't think he made a statement on Saturday, I don't think that's true, I think the president is giving us a hint that he knows a lot more about the situation than he can share. And the difference here would be for the world and for North Korea and for South Korea, our ally, is that unlike the transfer of power between to Kim Jong-un, from Kim Jong-il, and even from Kim Il-sung to Kim Jong-il to Kim Jong-un, those were planned transfers of power because they knew their health was fading. They knew they were near the end of their lives, so they were able to smoothly kind of transition in North Korea terms. In this case, this puts kind of North Korea in chaos mode in a way that we've really not seen North Korea in since the founding by Kim Il-sung. And I think that gives an opportunity to our allies like South Korea to potentially seize on this moment if it is true that Kim Jong-un is not coming back.
You know, it's interesting to me that that could be the case. So, Wes, and we only got a minute here, Wes, the deity aspect of this, that is something within their culture. But there has to be people within that culture that also resist his leadership.
Right, right. And there are people probably in the upper echelons of Korean government that secretly resist him or resent him. And so that's possibly at play as well. But Jordan's correct. They are viewed as deity. They have a tradition that they have promulgated since the 1950s, that the family descended from a volcanic region of North Korea when the North Korean people first started, you know, eons ago, and that the only people that can rule the country are the people that are from this family line. I'm sure not all of their leaders buy into that, but by and large, that is the party line, and many of the people do buy into that.
All right, I'm going to ask Wes to stay with us for another segment. We're getting into this. You're getting analysis here on this topic that I want to be ahead of the curve on this because we really do think something is up. So we want to get a sense of that and see where that goes. We're going to take your calls. If you served in the military or had a family member that did on the Korean Peninsula, we'd love to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Also, don't forget, we're in our matching challenge at ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate to us, we're getting a matching gift for. ACLJ.org. Only if you're able. If you're able. ACLJ.org. Back with more in a moment.
For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at aclj.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at aclj.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at aclj.org. It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at aclj.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. By the way, before we get back to this issue, this breaking developments, I wouldn't call it breaking news because we're still kind of trying to figure out where this is actually leading. I do want to let you know that we have just filed or in the process of filing today a brief with now the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals that covers Tennessee en banc, which is before the entire Sixth Circuit regarding Planned Parenthood and their attempts at exemptions from the restrictions that have been put in place. They think that they could play by their own rules while other medical professionals cannot. Now, look, ultimately, there's going to be a lifting on all of these restrictions as it relates to businesses over time. There will be lifting and Planned Parenthood will be able to operate. Why did we go to court? We went to court and are going to court because, once again, Planned Parenthood is taking the view that they should have a different set of standards than every other medical professional in the country. And I've got family members that are doctors and physicians and close friends that are, that can't do certain procedures right now that would actually help people significantly. But Planned Parenthood thinks they should get a pass. Jordan, this is now, I think, the 10th brief we have filed in less than 3 weeks.
That's right. So we're up to 10. I just filmed a video this morning that I'll be posting online saying that that was coming, that we had already filed 9 briefs, and we had another one going en banc prepared, so that's now being filed. And I just want to explain to people, this is all happening in about 3 weeks. The ACLJ has filed 10 briefs, 6 states, 5 different circuit courts of appeal. That means it's gone from the district court to the circuit court, and in the latest case in the Sixth Circuit, we're going en banc to the full judge panel. So this is just an explanation. I think it's a great way to show how at the ACLJ, our work, legal work in the United States, has continued even with the stay-at-home orders across the country and the different states that are some opening, kind of opening, and some that are still completely closed, that we are getting this work done for life. And when people say, well, when they allow these elective procedures, then what was the purpose? The purpose here is, I mean, I pray that we're not, but if we get back into this situation again nationwide in the fall, like some predict, or another pandemic down the road at some time in our history, that we are setting precedent around federal courts across the country, that when state governors decide not to allow elective procedures, Planned Parenthood isn't going to get the abortion distortion pass. They're not going to be treated any differently than doctors who aren't able to do other screenings or other elective procedures like foot surgeries and they're hurting economically because of that, that Planned Parenthood will not be treated differently. So even as some of these states begin to expire, not all of them, some that could be a long way down the road, it's an important precedent to set to save lives and to make sure that Planned Parenthood isn't treated differently by our federal courts.
All right. I asked if you were serving, if you have served in the Korean Peninsula, on the Korean Peninsula, while in the military, and family members that had, to give us a call at 1-800-684-3110. Bill from Tennessee had done just that. Bill, welcome to the broadcast. And first, thank you for your service and welcome to the broadcast. Look forward to your comment.
Thank you so much. And thank you, guys. You're just amazing. I'm so appreciative of what you are and what you do. I did serve as an officer in 2nd Ave Battalion in the 2nd Division at Camp Casey, Korea. And, it was a really, really difficult place to be because it was called an unaccompanied tour. So your family was not there. You spent really 24/7, ready to go and thwart the North Koreans if they ever came across. So it was a lot of threat, a lot of difficulty. But the culture and the people of South Korea are just amazing. And so it was a pleasure, quite honestly, to be able to engage with them and protect them and really establish some lasting relationships there. I was a strong believer while I was there and engaged with people in the Christian faith. And we know that South Korea has had an amazing transformation into Christ. So it was a pleasure to be there, but yet extremely difficult because of the threat. So just that was my experience.
No, I appreciate that, Bill. Wes, what was your experience? You served there as well. What was your experience?
Yeah, much like Bill said, it was a very interesting place to serve. You lived under a constant threat. I was with the aviation unit as well. And but the Korean people are a very, very, they're loyal allies to the United States. They realize that their security depends on their relationship with the United States. North Korea has always been the aggressor, certainly in the war in the 1950s, but then other incidents since then. They are aggressive. They are unpredictable. And yet the Korean people are very, very, you know, pro-United States. The Christian community is huge there. The largest churches I have ever attended in my life were in Seoul, Korea. But on the other hand, Seoul, Korea is an artillery range of the North. So you live under that constant threat.
Let me ask you this, Wes, one last question for you, and that's this. If there is a transition, will there be a power play with China? Because I think that's, on one hand, you've got China to look at, right? Japan has an interest. The United States has an interest. And, of course, the United States' interest aligns with South Korea. The South Koreans have been very cautious in what they're saying. Will there be a regional power play?
You know, I don't think so, only because I think all of the countries that you just mentioned, what they are interested in is stability in that region. And this uncertainty is disconcerting, because whenever you're dealing with a rogue nation that is steeped in secrecy and there is uncertainty, that is a reason for concern. I think the rest of the region, they want the status quo to continue, except that they do want better relations with North Korea. And of course, they don't want North Korea to continue to be a nuclear power. As far as the internal aspects of North Korea itself, they really think back when Kim Jong-un's father died. He was dead for 2 or 3 days before it was ever announced. It was completely secret, which makes this whole episode in his absence, you know, a little more suspicious and disconcerting. But I think most of the Korean leadership, they're looking for the same things that Kim Jong-un has been looking for with President Trump. And that is, they want to be accepted as a nuclear power, and they want the sanctions lifted. So hopefully, if someone else does come to power, they will see the wisdom in maintaining those goals and policies of Kim Jong-un, yep. And that is to be accepted and also to have the sanctions lifted. But I think as far as the region goes, they want relationships to improve. I don't think even China would be looking for a power play there. I could be wrong.
Yep. All right, Colonel Wes Smith, we appreciate it. We're going to be joined later in the broadcast by Colonel Skip Ash, who also served on the Korean Peninsula. We'll take your calls also, especially if you served on the Korean Peninsula. We would sure love to hear from you. 1-800, get your experience. 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Now, as we are all working remotely, we encourage you to stay engaged with the ACLJ at aclj.org. But you can also do this. You can go to our Facebook pages, and I've got a page. The ACLJ has a page. Jordan has a page. We encourage you to do that. I think Fan has a page. Twitter as well for all of us. Great way to stay engaged on all of these issues that we're following. Let me say a couple of other things. We are going to do a special concert the last night of the month, and it was pre-recorded. This is going to be kind of the best of series. There are 4 new songs, but even those songs were recorded with our friend John Schneider, 2.5 months ago, before the spread of the pandemic. So you don't have to worry about it, even though there'll be some audiences in these. These are the best of. But we brought in, we're going to show the songs with Lee Greenwood, Ricky Skaggs, John Schneider, and others. It'll be a great event. We encourage you to look at that on Thursday evening, probably around 9 o'clock Eastern time is my guess. When that'll be going on, we'll have it exactly. Support the work of the ACLJ at aclj.org. We're here for another 30 minutes. You know how to get us. Back with more in a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Where is Kim Jong-un? Where is the leader of North Korea? He has been absent for 2 weeks, hasn't been seen. There's been all kind of speculation. A question came up at the press conference yesterday. I want to play it for you, but listen very carefully to the president's response, especially at the end of his answer. Take a listen.
But last Saturday, Senator Graham, he mentioned in the Fox News he interviewed. He said
he didn't say anything last Saturday. Nobody knows where he is, so he obviously couldn't have said it. If you have a, this is breaking news.
Yes.
That Kim Jong-un made a statement on Saturday, I don't think so.
Yeah. Answer is, I don't think so. Which, the president hasn't told us everything he knows, and I understand that from national security reasons. But it sure seems, Jordan, and then I'll go to Fan, Jordan first, that something is definitely up here.
Absolutely. I mean, for the president to say that, I mean, to get that kind of question, like, oh, well, didn't he make that statement, and didn't he make a comment? And the president said, no, I don't think so. Again, the president knows more than we do. He's being briefed by his national security team, and this is more than bizarre. In these types of situations where you have a strongman, a dictator, almost a deity-like figure, as we discussed earlier in the broadcast, to not show up at major public events, to make no official appearances for this long period of time, it can create very unstable situations quickly and power grab moves. But two, it leaves the world kind of in limbo, and especially that region of the world in limbo. So I think at a time when, you know, you can almost be fully focused on COVID-19, this is something for our national security purposes we have to keep an eye on, because it is getting more and more suspicious as the days go on.
Let's go to Jeff in Texas. He's calling on line one. Jeff, go ahead.
Hey, guys. Just want to thank you for everything you do. And my grandfather served in Korean War out of the 7th Infantry Division out of Fort Ord, California.
Yep.
And he would just share stories about how they were under constant threat, and he really thought it was going to be a long, drawn-out war, the time that he spent there. He shared quite a few stories, but I'm just grateful for our military and everybody that's serving then and now.
Well, look, when you have a time of transition, which may be what they're in, we don't know that for sure. Everybody's trying to still figure out what exactly this all means. You have to be concerned, though, about where this goes. And the conflict in Korea, they called it a police action. We're going to be joined by Skip Ash next. We're going to talk about that. It was initially a police action. That's how they defined it. But it's an important peninsula. It's one where we're hoping they do not nuclearize with nuclear weapons. That would create a whole different peninsula situation for the world. And the geopolitical aspects of it are significant. But let me also go up. We're going to be joined by Skip in a moment. Colonel Skip Ash will be joining us. But let me go back up to Washington first to Than Bennett. Congress not coming back May 4th, which I could have, when I heard about what was being said by the House physician and members of the House, it seemed likely to me that they were not going to come back. What actually happened there in a minute, if you can?
Sure, Jay. Look, Leader Hoyer announced that they were going to come back. He made that announcement yesterday, and his members objected to that very strongly, Jay. And so a day later today, this morning, he announced that they would not be coming back on Monday. And look, I think it makes some sense. There's only 100 members of the United States Senate. It's a lot easier to conduct business with social distancing. 450 members of the United States House, Jay. And, you know, I think the American people are probably interested in getting them back to work as soon as possible. But that's a very real logistical concern. 450 members of Congress inside one chamber. I think they're going to take one more week to figure it out. And my guess is by May 11th, they'll be back. I also think, Jay, there's probably going to be a proxy voting proposal on the table. I don't know if it'll be good or bad, but I think there will be one on the table.
Well, we'll be looking at it to determine if it's good or bad, but I understand their desire to want to do that. I mean, look at the situation they're in, and you see that, and you say, okay, I get it. Anyways, we're taking a break. We come back. Skip Ash is joining us. We're talking about the situation in North Korea, South Korea. It's very complicated right now. We'll take your calls and comments. If you served or had a family member that served on the Korean Peninsula, call us at 800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at ACLJ.org.
Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at ACLJ.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at ACLJ.org. For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at ACLJ.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at ACLJ.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at ACLJ.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We're taking your calls at 800-684-3110. Let me encourage you, if you've served or had a family member that served in the military on the Korean Peninsula, we'd sure love to hear from you. 1-800-684-3110. Where is Kim Jong-un? Now, Jordan, that is a question that has geopolitical concerns. We'll be joined by Skip Ash in a moment. Jordan first.
Absolutely. I mean, major geopolitical concerns, because in the past, the way that North Korea has been able to kind of keep this tight, the leadership there, this tight hold on power and on their people, is by propping one, and kind of with propaganda, this family up and the leaders that are chosen, there have only been three, as deity-like figures. So almost like god-like figures that are worshipped. So you've got Kim Il-sung, and then you've got Kim Jong-un, and you've got the situation now with the son. I mean, this is, again, a situation that is unprecedented for North Korea. If there is no chosen successor right now by Kim, then there would be a power struggle. And that's something that North Korea hasn't gone through in decades and decades and decades of this family leadership, where the family has made the decision. And now, as you heard from Wes, you could have competing family members. You could be dividing up the military, who's choosing what sides. And of course, it gives an opening into the world potentially to exploit what could be a chaotic situation in North Korea for the first time in decades, where they haven't had this kind of grip on the people.
Yeah, let me go to Skip Ash. Colonel, United States Army, served in Korea. Skip, we talked about this last week. Let's re-look at this again. We're now a week later. No sign of Kim Jong-un. You heard the president's comment when asked about a statement that Kim Jong-un initially made or allegedly made about on Saturday. And the president said, trust me, you didn't hear from Kim. You're breaking news here because you did not hear from Kim Jong-un on Saturday. What is your sense?
I have a feeling that there is something really serious going on up there, that that he is ill or incapacitated in some type of measure. The public television of Korea announced that message from him to these workers, but there were no pictures involved. It was just words that were given. So that could have happened at any time. And I think what that was trying to do was to placate the common Koreans who aren't quite sure. Remember, there are stakeholders in this kingdom, so to speak, and each of them has a measure of power. I mean, they want to, those who are in charge want to keep, stay in charge. So if right now there is something that is really serious with Kim Jong-un, either has passed away or he's incapacitated and may not come back to power, right now there's a jockeying for power and trying to establish who is going to be in charge at the end of this when it's announced what really is happening. And that's one of those things where they're actually doing some bargaining and people are saying, okay, this is what I want for support and so forth. And I think that's what's going on. They want to have everything set before they announce it so that they're in charge and they have control before they let the public know.
Skip, let me ask you this question. People are listening to this broadcast or watching us on TV right now and saying, why does this matter to me? Why does this matter to the United States? What is the geopolitical significance of Korea, and why does it matter to the United States?
Korea is one of the most destabilizing, North Korea is one of the most destabilizing states in the world. It is a failed state. It's a hermit kingdom. It is a state that normally it cannot support itself. They have this concept from Kim Il-sung called Juche, the self-reliance concept, which has utterly failed. Their economy is a basket case, so they need help from outside. When they normally need help from outside, they begin to rattle sabers or something to get everybody upset, so we give them food and aid and things like that to placate them. But when you're in a situation like this where they are so paranoid about those outside, they are so protective of their society, they may lash out irrationally because they may see if we're perceived to be weak, then people may come in to try to take us over. Remember, every radio produced in North Korea, every television only gets one channel. They only get the state channels. They're made so they can only hear what the North Korean regime wants them to hear. So they are very suspicious about South Korea, about China, about Japan, about the United States, and so we are not sure what they will do if they misread what's going on outside.
All right, we're taking your calls at 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. Skip Ash, Colonel, United States Army, retired, is with us. He's senior counsel for the ACLJ, heads up our international law group and our law of armed conflict. Let's go to Frank in Florida. He's calling on line one. And again, if you want to talk to us, 1-800-684-3110. Frank, go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes, sir. Good afternoon. One of the things that I would point out was I was over there from 78 to 79. We was on a Team Spirit, a CACS. They had curfew. I don't know if the Colonel Ash might remember that time frame or not, but they had curfews where you weren't allowed on the streets between 6 at night and 6 in the morning unless you were on official military maneuvers. But the point that I would make, you just asked about the geopoliticalness of it, is there's a lot of hardliner generals in the North Korean Army and military that don't want nothing to do with the unification of South Korea. And that's because they're being pulled by China, because China does not want a unified Korea with a Western type of culture sitting right on their border. And I think that's one of the big things of North Korea. And if Kim Jong-un, or Il now, would want to make a maneuver to try to unify Korea and have more of a free world country, China doesn't want that. And the hardliners would be definitely against him on that.
Now, I appreciate you calling in, Frank, and thank you for your service. Skip, let me ask you this question. Is there any political reform movement inside of North Korea, or is it a lost cause in that regard?
I think there are probably individuals. A number of years ago, they were reporting on graffiti in certain parts of Korea against the regime. That really spooked the regime, and they went after them with great vigor to stamp that out. So I think there probably is, but it's very small. It's not well organized because of the police state nature of things. You know, you're never quite sure who's reporting on you. But I guess the danger is, if there's a power vacuum, who does move in? The South Koreans probably would like reunification, but it would be very, very expensive because they would have to be absorbing a complete basket case and people who have no clue how to live in a Western-type society. If you look at some of those who have defected and gone to South Korea, it's taken years for them to adapt and to be able to function in a Western society. Even East Germany, when the Germans were united, had problems trying to accommodate and to adapt into the Western society. So it's awful. Plus, there would, even China's concerned about this vacuum. Again, the gentleman was right. They don't want a Western nation on their border. So that would be South Korea. But they don't want an influx of millions of refugees either from a country that can't feed them.
All right, we're going to ask Skip to stay with us for the last segment. We're going to take your calls as well at 1-800-684-3110. If you're on the line, hang on the line. Let me go to Than Bennett for an update in, as we close this segment out, for an update in Washington. What is the latest? Looks like Congress, again, people may be joining us just now, Than. Looks like Congress may not be coming back.
Yeah, Congress has been out for the last several weeks, and sort of the first date that they had looked at a return was next Monday, May 4th, Jay. It looks like the Senate will return to focus on mostly executive nominations, got some places inside the administration that need filled, also some judicial nominations, and start drafting the next stimulus response, which it sure sounds like might include an infrastructure component, Jay. But the House is not going to return next week, and the reason that Speaker Pelosi and Leader Hoyer give is that the next CARES .2 package is not quite ready. But Jay, I will just tell you, it's pretty well known here in town that really what happened is when Leader Hoyer announced that they were going to come back, both the attending physician and the members of his own caucus, so Democrat members, said, look, we don't think it's quite time to come back. We want to give it another week. Hopefully cases will decline in the DMV area during that time. So Jay, when they do come back, I anticipate it will probably be May 11th, but at least not before then. I think you will see action on another stimulus package, probably including an infrastructure component. Yep. And Jay, I also think you will see a proxy voting proposal on the table. Hopefully that will be bipartisan. We haven't seen that yet. It needs to be bipartisan if it's going to be successful.
So the pandemic in D.C. seems to not have reached a peak yet, Than. What's the situation up there?
Yeah, so cases both reported and deaths are continuing to climb, have not yet plateaued. It does look like maybe the curve is starting to plateau, but both but those numbers are continuing to increase. So, Jay, the most recent is that Governor Northam, Governor Hogan, and then Mayor Bowser have said that they are going to try to work together on a timeline. Right now, the timelines for reopenings are not synced, but those three local leaders are going to try to work together, come up with a unified timeline to begin reopening. But right now, Jay, the first stated end of the stay-at-home order is May 15th in Washington, D.C. I think that's the very earliest you will start to see anything relaxing.
Yeah, and in Virginia, it's still, I think, June 10th or the first week of June. So, all right, when we come back, we're going to still have Skip Ash with us. I also want to talk some politics with Jordan. We'll take your calls as well at 1-800-684-3110. Last segment, you can call us on any topic, 800-684-3110. Again, if you're able, let me encourage you to support the ACLJ these last 3 days of our matching challenge at ACLJ.org. Any amount you donate, we get a matching gift for. ACLJ.org, if you're able. Back with more in a moment.
For 30 years, the American Center for Law and Justice has been dedicated to protecting your religious and constitutional freedoms. Because of you, we've seen great success in the courts and Congress concerning the issues that matter most to you and your families. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo.
Our decades-long commitment to the Constitution and the rule of law is at the center of everything we do. The bottom line, our work could not take place without your generous support.
Now more than ever, during this time of uncertainty, the ACLJ needs your support. Consider making a gift online at aclj.org. Donating online is safe and secure, and an online gift at aclj.org can be put to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to continue the battle against abortion giant Planned Parenthood, to protect Christians facing persecution, and so much more. Every dollar makes a difference. Stand with the ACLJ today. Support our work online at aclj.org. It's a critical time for our nation and our world. With so many challenges facing our country, the work of the American Center for Law and Justice has never been more important. And during this time of uncertainty, there's no better way to support the ACLJ than through online giving. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulo.
We truly appreciate your financial support. Without it, it would be impossible to do our work here and around the globe. And the best way to support our work is to make your financial gifts online at aclj.org.
Network. Online giving, simple and secure. And by making an online gift, your support goes to work immediately, enabling the ACLJ to defend human life, to stand up for our good friend Israel, to work to uncover the corrupt deep state in Washington, and so much more. Make a difference today. Support the work of the ACLJ online at aclj.org. Every dollar makes a difference. Give today online at aclj.org.
Hey, welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We've been talking about the situation with Kim Jong-un. Where is he? What does it mean for the geopolitically? But let's talk about what it means politically. We're going to go to Jordan Seculo on that. How does this play into the upcoming election, or does it?
I think it absolutely plays into the upcoming election because President Trump had those unprecedented meetings with Kim Jong-un. So depending on how this turns out, if there is a new leader, is the president able to establish a relationship immediately with them, whoever he or she may be, so that things remain as calm as possible on the Korean Peninsula? That's one thing that we need to look at politically, becomes important. I do believe, though, ultimately, unless it just explodes as an issue, the biggest issue right now for the president politically is, one, he's got a candidate he's running against is basically in his home bunker and still not communicating very well. The president is this election is for the president to win or lose. It will not be because Joe Biden beat President Trump. It will be because of the response to COVID-19, at these openings that are happening right now across the country on a very small scale, by the way. You know, when the media reports this, I'm in one of those states that has an opening right on the line coming up. And if you actually read through what is allowed in most of the counties where the major cities are, it's basically where we were still, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago. It is still months away until you're talking about even a restaurant being at more than 50% capacity, and even weeks away from the restaurant actually being able to serve patrons in the restaurant at a lower capacity. So even the way that the openings have been described in some states, that is very minimal. In others, it's been more extreme. And I think, again, that's really up to the governors. Still, I think the president, ultimately, the buck stops at his desk. And that's going to be the big issue, how the economy recovers. And do we get to that point yet, even by November, or are we still dealing with COVID-19 seriously in our country? We hope not. I think all Americans hope we are not. But if we are, that will definitely play into the election. Do you change horses in the middle of a crisis? Not usually in our country. That has not been the case.
All right, we're going to get back to our phones, but I got a question, and we're getting a lot of calls still on the Korea conflict, 800-684-3110, but other topics. Well, Skip, initially the war in Korea was called a police action. Why?
It was called a police action primarily because the president, Truman at the time, did not want to declare war. We were war-weary. We had just demobilized our forces from World War II. So we're now out of World War II, probably 2 or 3 years from demobilization, and all of a sudden we have another crisis that could be a war. So he tried to do it without calling it a war. Remember, if you declare war, there are certain laws in the United States that automatically go into effect, and they don't necessarily go to effect if you are involved in a military action short of war. So what he was trying to do was similar to what LBJ did during the Vietnam War. He wanted to have both guns and butter. He wanted to have the civilian economy begin to take off, but he also had to deal with this military problem on the Korean Peninsula. So it was called a police action with the idea so they didn't implicate some of the constitutional provisions on war making.
All right, let's go to line three. Rich is calling. Rich, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Hey, thank you for taking my call. Sure. I have a kind of like a Frank, the last caller. I served in 82 in Chunju Team Spirit, and I was stationed at Clark Air Force Base, and I just wanted to go and see the place. And let's face it, we had a lot of fun in the Philippines, and I got the Osan we landed. I saw the Hawk missiles pointing towards the north and how disciplined and what they lived under, even back then in 82. and it was a kind of quite an eye-opener to see how the people live over there. They're very nice. Everybody spoke English pretty much in the Philippines, and if you ran into somebody in Seoul or at the bases that spoke English, they just went out of their way to just kind of befriend you and talk to you. So it was a different time, a different world. I can't imagine what it's like now.
Well, we appreciate your service. It was a hotbed then. It's a hotbed now, and now with some additional instability because of the unknown of Kim Jong-un. Russ is calling from Virginia. He's on line two. Russ, welcome to the broadcast. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. I'm commander of a small VFW post here in Virginia, but I served in Korea 2 years, 1966 through 67. And Korea was a very primitive, still a very primitive place at that time. But 66 to 69 is actually called the Second Korean Conflict.
Yeah, why did they call it that, Russ? Why did they call it the Second? I've heard that before, the Second Korean Conflict.
Well, it started in November of 66. They came across the border and actually killed six of our GIs at the UN compound on November 2nd, 1966. But there were a lot of small skirmishes where they came across the border and just kept attacking our guys. And it was a pretty scary place from 66 through 69. Like I say, I was there 2 years, 66, 67. I was in the Signal Corps. I was actually stationed in Yongsan, but I traveled all over the country, which is actually a beautiful country. But
we appreciate you, Russ. I appreciate you calling in. I appreciate your service to the country. Skip, where did you serve? You were at the Tank Battalion, right?
Well, my first time I was with a divisional cavalry squadron, and the second time I was there with a divisional with a tank battalion. I was up just south of the demilitarized zone. The 2nd Infantry Division was stationed between the demilitarized zone and Seoul. So, and that was the major route of attack for a North Vietnamese land attack. So the U.S. forces were there so that there would be sort of a trigger. As soon as the war started, the United States would be involved because U.S. casualties would have been taken in the first day. So I was stationed twice just south of the demilitarized zone.
I appreciate Skip, thanks for your service, and thanks for coming on the broadcast today. We're going to go to the last question, which is unrelated to this. It's a Washington question. Marianne from California, go ahead. You're on the air, Marianne.
Hi. Thanks for everything the ACLJ does, and also thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
My question is, what is to prevent Adam Schiff from destroying any or all of the documents that he doesn't want to release?
You're talking about the documents that were the underlying transcripts from the interviews during the Russia probe. And I'll do it first, and Jordan and Than could quickly speak to it. Others have it, so he can't do that. What he's trying to fight right now is the release of those documents, even though, Jordan, he voted to release them, but he can't destroy them.
It was a bipartisan vote taken to release these closed-door depositions once everything was over, the Russia probe, Bob Mueller over, impeachment over, and now there were 53. These were people who, by the way, did not testify publicly either, so they weren't necessarily the people that you saw on TV during the Intelligence Committee hearings. So 53 high-level people, too, like James Clapper, Susan Rice, Samantha Powers. I mean, the list goes on and on. And there's 53 of them. Now, 43 he sent over to the Director of National Intelligence to go through the declassification process. And they did, and they came back, and they could be released right now. He will not release them. But there are 10, Dad, that he is holding on to. And he will not even send over to the DNI to have the declassification process. Those 10, I believe, are the key because they probably undermine, and Adam Schiff knows it, entire last 2.5-3 years that he spent trying to take down our duly elected president.
All right, don't forget, support the work of the ACLJ if you're able, or the last couple of days of our matching challenge, ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org. We'll talk to you tomorrow. Have a good day. Stay safe.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.